Sinbad the Sailor was the kindest thing he'd been called. Syed the Idiot was what most of them said. Even once he had reached Ceres, and leased a ship with the last bit of credit his dead father had left him, even there, the other prospectors and miners called him Towhead, and worse. Well, now the shoe was on the other foot. He'd show them. Then he pictured how happy Fatima would be when he returned to Algiers, wealthy and happy at last. He would be able to shower her with diamonds and rich gowns of silk with gold threading. Perhaps even acquire a second wife. He was so pleased that he decided to take a full meal from his meager food stocks, instead of his usual handful of boiled couscous. But first, he would register his claim with the International Astronautical Authority. That was important. No. Before that, he must make his prayer to Allah. That was more important. He realized he was nearly babbling out loud. Taking a deep breath to calm himself, Quara decided, prayer first, then register with the IAA, then celebrate with a whole meal. He kept his ship spinning all the time, counterbalancing his habitation unit with the power generator and other equipment at the end of the kilometer-long tether. Not for him the long months in micro-G, with his muscles going flabby and his bones decalcifying so that he would have to spend even longer months in lunar orbit rebuilding his body cells. No, Quara lived in almost full earthly gravity, so he had no trouble unfurling his prayer rug once he had taken it from his storage cabinet. He was spreading the rug on the one uncluttered area of his compartment when his communications receiver chimed. A message? He was startled at the thought. Who would be calling me out here, in this wilderness? Only Fatima and the IAA knows where I am. And the people back at Ceres, of course. But why would they call a lonely prospector? Fatima, he thought. Something has happened to her. Something terrible. His voice trembled as he answered. This is the Star of the East? Who is calling, please? A bearded man's face appeared on his main screen. He looked almost Asian to Quara, or perhaps Hispanic.
This is Shanidar. You are trespassing on territory that belongs to Humphreys Space Systems Incorporated.
This rock?
Quara was instantly incensed.
No, sir. There is no registered claim for this asteroid. I was just about to send in my own claim when you hailed me.
You haven't registered a claim for it?
I am going to right now.
The bearded man shook his head, very slightly, just a small movement from side to side.
No, you're not, he said.
They were the last words Quara ever heard. The laser blast from Shanidar blew a fist-sized hole through the thin hull of his ship. Quara's death scream quickly screeched to silence as the air rushed out and his lungs collapsed in massive hemorrhages of blood.
George Ambrose cradled his stone mug of beer in both his big paws. They call it beer, he grumbled inwardly. I haven't seen a decent beer since I came out here. Fucking concoction these rock rats call beer tastes more like platypus piss than anything else. The real stuff was available, but the price was so high for anything imported that George gritted his teeth and sipped the local brew. As joints went, the pub wasn't so bad. Reminded George of the Pelican Bar back at Cellini, except for the twins in their spray-paint bikinis. They worked behind the bar under the protective eye of the owner, barkeep. More than 260 million kilometers away, the old Pelican was. Nearly a week's flight, even in the best of the fusion ships. He looked over the crowd. The pub was a natural cave in Ceres's porous rocky crust. The floor had been smoothed down, but nobody ever bothered to finish the walls or ceiling.
Be a shame to leave this behind when we move to the habitat, George thought. He'd grown fond of the joint.
Everything in the pub was either scavenged or made from asteroidal materials. George was sitting on an old packing crate, reinforced by nickel iron rods and topped with a stiff plastic cushion cached from some ship's stores. The table on which he was leaning his beefy arms was carved rock, as was his mug. Some of the crowd were drinking from frosted aluminum steins, but George preferred the stone. The pride and joy of the pub was its bar, made of real wood, ferried in here by the daft old poppy who owned the joint. Maybe he isn't so daft, George mused. He's making more money than I am, that's for sure. More money than any of these rock rats. Men and women were jammed four deep at the bar and sitting at all the tables spotted across the place like stalagmites rising from the stone floor. Four or five men to every Sheila. A dozen more stood along the back wall, drinks in their hands. A pair of women and another bloke were sitting at the same table as George, but he oddly knew them, and they were chatting up each other, leaving him alone with his beer.
Strange crowd, he thought.
Prospectors and miners ought to be rough, odd-handed men, outback types like in the old videos. These blokes were college boys, computer nerds, family men and women with enough education and smarts to operate spacecraft and highly automated mining machinery. Not one of them ever used a pick or a shovel, George knew.
Hell's bells, I never did myself. Lightly, though, a different sort had been drifting in. Snotty-looking yobos, who kept pretty much to themselves. They didn't seem to have any real jobs, although they claimed they worked for HSS. They just hung around, as if they were waiting for something.
Off in the far corner of the cave, a couple of blokes were unpacking musical instruments and connecting up their amplifiers. Niles Ripley walked in, loose-jointed and smiling at his friends, just about everybody, with his trumpet case in one hand. George pushed himself to his feet and shambled to the bar for a refill of his platypus brew. Several people said hello to him, and he made a bit of a chat until Cindy slid the filled mug back to him. Or was it Mindy? George could never tell the twins apart. Then he went back to his table. Nobody had swiped a seat. That's the kind of a place the pub was. As the music began, low and sweet, George found himself thinking about his life. Never dreamed I'd be out here in the belt, digging ores out of fucking asteroids. Hard work, but better in prospecting, poking around the belt for months on end, looking for a really rich asteroid that the corporations haven't yet claimed. Open to make the big strike, so you can go home and live in luxury. Life takes weird turns.
The Ripper, who had been playing along with the other musicians, finally stood up and tore into a solo that rocked the cave. His trumpet echoed off the stone walls, bringing everyone to their feet, swaying and clapping in time to his soaring notes. When he finished, they roared with delight and insisted on more. The evening flew by. George forgot about the ship that he owed money on, forgot about getting up early tomorrow morning to finish the repair job on Matilda's main manipulator arm so he could get the hell out of Ceres and finish the mining job he'd signed up for before the contract deadline ran out and he had to pay a penalty to Astro Corporation. He just sat there with the rest of the crowd, grooving on the music, rushing to the bar along with everyone else when the band took a break, drinking all night long, yet getting high on the music. Not the beer. It was well past midnight when the band broke up, after several encores, and started to pack their instruments and equipment. People began to file out of the pub, tired and happy. The twins had disappeared as usual. Nobody laid a hand on them, except in virtual reality. George plowed through the crowd and made his way to the Ripper.
"Let me buy you a beer, mate."
Ripley clicked his trumpet case shut, then looked up. Smiling, he said,
"Maybe a cola, if you can afford it." "Sure thing, Rip. No worries."
A few determined regulars still stood at the bar, apparently with no intention of leaving. George saw four of the new guys there, too, grouped together, bent over their drinks and talking to one another in low, serious tones. They all wore coveralls with the HSS logo over their name tags.
"Another beer for me and a cola for the Ripper here," George called to the barkeep.
"A cola," sneered one of the yabos. The others laughed. Ripley smiled down the bar at him. "Can't have any alcohol after midnight. I'm working on the habitat in the morning."
"Sure," came the reply.
George scowled at them. They were so new to Ceres they didn't realize that an imported cola cost half the Earth. He turned back toward Ripley.
"I'll have a show you put on tonight."
They seemed to like it.
"Ever think of playing professionally? You're too good to be sitting out on this rock."
Ripley shook his head. "Nah, I play the trumpet for fun. If I got serious about it, it'd become work."
You hurt my ears with that damn noise, said another of the Yabos. Yeah.